Get something accomplished today that you didn't yesterday.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Let's do another season recap podcast today. We're going to be looking at the Minnesota Timberwolves. So
let's get to it.
Just me doing this one solo, so you'll have to put up with my voice. The Timberwolves, a team that got themselves back to the playoffs, just squeaking by on the last day of the year against the Denver Nuggets, 47-35, despite losing Jimmy Butler for a big chunk of time. The eighth seed in the Western Conference, right on their expected win-loss of 47-35 as well. They were the 24th pace team in the NBA. Should be no surprise with coach Tom Thibodeau there that they slowed it down. What is surprising is the fact that they had the fourth best offense and the 27th best defense. Thibodeau, obviously known for being a defensive coach. I'm not sure how much that's actually accurate anymore. And not really an offensive savant, but they still were able to provide some really strong offensive numbers despite being the last team in the NBA in three-point attempt rate, attempting just 22.5 threes per game. Conversely, the second most two-point attempts in the NBA. They got to the line a whole lot as well. And that getting to the line was a huge part of them being able to put up that high offense. Fifth highest free throw rate in the NBA. They didn't turn it over. Best in the NBA at turnover percentage. Fourth highest in offensive rebounding rate as well. So all that stuff adds up to being that fourth best defense. In terms of fourth best offense, sorry, defensively, they did struggle. They allowed teams to shoot high percentages against them. They didn't rebound the ball defensively very well either. In terms of a defensive rebound percentage, just 24th there, although they did grab a lot of rebounds against, oppositions did grab a lot of rebounds against them. They were number one in terms of, as I said, turning the ball over, which is a key part to that offense being as successful as what it was early in, for the majority of this season. But it's not that the season was 100% a success. There are plenty of things that I criticized the Timberwolves and in particular Tom Thibodeau about. Andrew Wiggins was piss poor in terms of what he could be for the majority of the season. And now, recording this one a little bit early, because again, I'm heading away for a few days. Reports have recently come out of friction between Karl Anthony Towns and Tom Thibodeau. And this is something that I've talked about on the podcast before. The way that Thibodeau handles things offensively, the way he treats his players, it's going to piss him off. And at some point, there are going to be concerns. And this one here, if there's someone's got to go, it surely has to be Thibodeau. It wouldn't be Karl Anthony Towns under no circumstance. Could I see this team trading Towns away because him and Tom Thibodeau don't get along? Thibs just seems like a real miserable bastard at this point, and I don't blame players for not wanting to play there, and it is going to come back to bite this franchise in the ass for giving him the sort of powers they gave him as the GM and the head coach. This team moving forward, they do have the 20th pick in this draft. They lost their own draft pick, but they ended up recouping one from the Oklahoma City Thunder. They traded away their first pick. Let me double check. They gave their pick away to the Atlanta Hawks in the Adrian Payne trade, and then they did get one back via the Thunder, which was from the part of the Enes Kanter deal a few years ago, which they got from the Utah Jazz as part of the Ricky Rubio deal. Yes, that is the way that all worked out. You got to try and remember where all these picks came from. In terms of free agency, Jamal Crawford has already opted out of his player option, so he's an unrestricted free agent. Aaron Brooks is also an unrestricted free agent. You've got a bunch of restricted guys led by Nemanja Bjelica, who was a key part and was really, really massive for this team when Jimmy Butler went down and then almost inexplicably barely saw the court in the playoffs at all. You've got guys that just didn't play as or also being restricted free agents. Amir Jefferson, Marcus Georges Hunt, and Anthony Brown, who combined for very, very few minutes. And you've got Cole Aldrich, who only has a partial guarantee on his deal. Another one of those players. who just doesn't see the court for Tom Thibodeau. And again, no one should be shocked by that given the way that Thibodeau runs everything and just does not use his bench, does not empower his players whatsoever. And that is a concern, I believe, as a neutral observer. Let's talk about Karl Anthony Towns' season. Actually, let's have a look at some of the advanced leaders on this team and see if there's anything that really stands out. Towns led the team in offensive rating, while the worst offensive rating on this team went to Cole Aldrich, who only played 49 minutes, and then above him was Derrick Rose. Defensively, the best defensive rating on the team was Towns as well, so he was clearly the best player on this team according to those metrics. Worst defensively was Jamal Crawford, excluding the blokes who played limited minutes. And again, not really too much of a shock there. Towns had a fantastic season, really was key on this team in getting them where they needed to go, as was Jimmy Butler, who came across in that off-season trade. Both of those guys had on-off metrics of over 13, which is obviously really, really huge as a number, but again, skewed by how many minutes they play as opposed to the sort of playing time that the bench mob get. As for Townsie, there was lots of people touting him for the number one draft pick in fantasy leagues. I wasn't quite at that spot. I had him a little bit higher than where he finished. He was the 8th ranked player overall, played all 82 games as he has done in all three of his NBA seasons, 36 minutes per night, but it wasn't without issue this year. 21 points, 1.5 threes, 12.5 boards, 2.5 assists, 0.8 steals, 1.5 blocks, 55, 86, and 42. Elite shooting numbers. But the fact that Towns' usage rate went down from 27.5 to 23, that he attempted 4 fewer field goals per game, was piss poor. Yes, Jimmy Butler arrived. Yes, Jeff Teague arrived.
My name is Jeff.
But Towns was going through stretches where he just wasn't seeing the ball at all. To have multiple games during the season with single-digit shot attempts is just not on. This is a guy that should be pushing 17, 18 shots per game. One of the most offensively gifted centers in the entire NBA. He can hit the three. He can finish down low. He can be a pick-and-pop threat, a pick-and-roll threat. He can do pretty much everything that's needed to be done offensively, but he was being limited so that Andrew Wiggins could take ISO step-backs and miss them, and really not provide anything resembling close to efficient offense. You look on the cleaning the glass and shooting accuracy portion, and it ranks guys in percentiles. Everything is blue here. And the lowest percentile that Towns is 72nd percentile on short mid-range jumpers. Everything else is higher there. So he's in, you know, the top 25% at the rim, long mid-ranges, overall mid-ranges, in corner threes, in non-corner threes, in total threes. Really, really strong offensive season from Townsie. He wasn't able to take that step forward because he did score 4 fewer points per game this season and wasn't able to supplement it in other areas. The assists, the steals, the blocks, the rebounds, the threes, everything was basically exactly the same as what it was the year before. Yes, he hit his threes at a much higher rate, meaning that his two-point percentage must also have dropped, but just that lack of usage did really limit him from being able to jump from the 7th guy to the 3rd guy, and he remained as the 8th ranked player this season, much to the chagrin of people who did take him early in the drafts, or, you know, right at the top of drafts, so the case may have been. The next guy we've got to talk about here is Jim Butler, who came across from the Chicago Bulls. Again, we just weren't sure how exactly he was going to fit in on this team, but ended up the year as the 14th ranked player, played 59 games after that knee injury. Last season, the 16-17 season, was the only year in the last 5 that he has played over 70 games, so we do have to really worry about Butler's ability to stay healthy, especially with his lower body, and it always tends to happen in the March portion of the season. I'm not saying that it's a definitive thing, that it's because of all the minutes that he plays that leads him to break down and fatigue causes injuries to happen to the lower body. But I'm also not saying that. There is a massive chance that that is the reason, or at least a significant contributing factor to the reason that Butler gets hurt in the second half of the season after just building up a shit ton of minutes. Another 37 minutes per game for Butler this season, averaging 22 points, 1.2 threes, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 47, 85, and 35%. Never going to be a great three-pointer, but getting 35% out of him is probably the best you can hope for. Good two-point efficiency as well. He sacrificed a little bit in terms of usage, down from 26 down to 24.5, and that caused a slight dip in his points per game. He also saw His assist rate drop as well, as Jeff Teague was holding onto the ball a lot more than what Butler was, especially given the sort of role that Butler was playing in Chicago last season. But overall, a real success. You would have been able to pick him in the second round of drafts, an ADP of 18, and he was able to exceed that. And I think we should be looking at, you know, very similar production for Butler heading into next season. He was a real key factor to this team being pushed into the playoffs. Defensively, he was pretty good. He got named to the second team all-defensive team. I personally wouldn't have had him there. I would have had Joshy Richardson there in that spot. But it's hard to argue too heavily against Butler being in that second team all-defense, given he was an impactful player in that area and he was so good for this Minnesota Timberwolves team. Let's go on to the next guy, and that is Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
Teague came across after one season in Indiana, played 70 games, 33 minutes, 14-3-7 with 1.5 steals and 1.2 threes, 45-85 and 37%. So some decently strong percentages from Teague. He wasn't able to maintain the same level of production he had in Indiana, where he was the 36th ranked player, because he didn't average 8 assists per game and he averaged 1 point per game fewer. Everything else for Teague, pretty much exactly about the same. Efficiency, very similar, although he didn't get to the line quite as often. Not a surprise, given that Butler had the ball in his hands more. And I think, again, this similar level of production for Teague is a reasonable facsimile of what we can get from him as we move forward. He has just turned 30, so maybe one or two more years at this sort of level for Teague. As a guy who's a mid-round draft pick, he finished 51st this season, but a guy who's maybe in the 60s, maybe he sees a little bit of a dip in efficiency, maybe Butler handles the ball a little bit more, and we see the assists go from 6.9, which they were for the season, down to the 6.3 or 6.5, which they were over the last couple of months, and that could drop him a couple of spots down there. So that is something for us to pay attention to when viewing Teague's value, as he is already 30 years of age and some decline could be occurring there, and we might see a little bit more of Jim Butler in that position. But overall, I thought that there were times when it was a concern the way that Teague was playing on this team, and I voiced that opinion plenty of times. Yeah, he needed to make sure he was getting those shots out to Jim Butler and Karl-Anthony Towns. And that did happen to a degree. At the start of the year, he was taking way more shots. And then as the season progressed and he came back from a knee injury, which looked really severe and didn't keep him out that long, he was able to keep that usage a little bit lower than what it had been earlier on in the season. Still over 20%, but he did rein that in a little bit and getting a little bit more to Butler and Towns, which was what this team, I thought, really, really did need. If they were to be successful, which in the end, I say the season probably was a success, but he was another, you know, really solid player for them. And as much as I like Ricky Rubio, and as much as I think Rubio is a better player, I think Teague probably fits a little bit better on this team, because it enabled Butler to have the ball in his hands more, and it enabled Teague to work a little bit more off ball and as a spot up shooter, which really isn't Rubio's strength. So yeah, for, you can say all you want and Rubio is better, and I think he is. But on this team, with the fit and how it was, it's not that Teague was necessarily the best addition, but I think he probably did fit better than what Rubio did in that same spot. Taj Gibson, a guy that I wasn't expecting anything out of coming across. And we know that Tom Thibodeau, again, this is why he shouldn't have GM powers. You know, just completely targeting guys that I used to coach. The only players that can be good are the guys that I used to coach. That's the sort of attitude which is nonsense. I know that wasn't with Jeff Teague, but Taj Gibson, at the age of 33, who took significant steps back last year for Chicago and for Oklahoma City, came across. And I was proven wrong in this one, because he was really impressive. Played 33 minutes a game, all 82 games, 12-7. He averaged 0.8 steals, 0.7 blocks, 58-77%. Yeah, they're solid enough numbers. He was a top 100 player, but there's just really no upside here for Taj Gibson. That the usage was really limited, under 15% for him. Efficiency way up, 58 from the field and 77 from the line. Numbers which he hadn't been able to do at any point in his career, but he doesn't provide defensive numbers. He doesn't move the ball. His rebounding was okay. Look, those numbers are fine, but realistically, where's the upside if you're taking him in the 10th round or 11th round? How does he get better than this? And as I said, he's going to be turning 33 in the next month or so. And you know, at that sort of a at that sort of a rate, can he maintain that? Now, in the playoffs, he did struggle the last four games against the Rockets. He played under 25 minutes. It's a terrible matchup for Taj, of course, playing against Houston. But maybe that's something that we could just bear in mind, and maybe he doesn't get the 33 minutes. If there was a normal coach in charge, he wouldn't be getting 33 minutes a night, because they'd be saying, we don't have to play our starters every single minute of every single game, and he'd be getting 29 minutes, 28, 30 minutes. But it's not a normal coach. It's Tom Thibodeau, and he will be getting those minutes, and he will continue to play at a similar level. But there is risk of that, if those efficiency numbers, which were career highs for Taj, there is risk of both of those field goal and free throw percentage numbers dipping next season. Let's talk about a guy who was not good at all this season, Andrew Wiggins, the 142nd ranked fantasy player, averaging 17.7 points, 1.5 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 0.6 blocks, 44 from the field, 64 from the line, and 33% from three-point land. The biggest thing to start on here is the fact that he dropped 12 percentage points in his free throws, and he had been at 76% every season of his career, and he went to 64% this season. That is an inexplicable drop. He also went from attempting 7 free throws a game to just 3.8 free throws a game. So if he had actually maintained his similar free throw rate, it would have been worse for him this season. Now, this is a theory I've been positing lately, is the players who are unhappy, or there is something going on either in their basketball life or their personal life, they will often see a big drop in free throw percentage. Wiggins was not happy. Again, Tom Thibodeau, not the best coach, not the best guy at relating to players. Wiggins has a deluded self of his sense of his own ability, thinking he shouldn't be the third option. And to be honest, he's right. He probably should be the fourth option, but he seems to think that he is way better than what he actually is. And that was bothering him. And that free throw percentage dip is horrendous. A true shooting of 50% is horrendous. He gets no assists. He gets no steals. He doesn't block. He doesn't rebound. He just doesn't do anything that's really good. Yeah, actually, to be fair, for his position, the block rate's not bad, but bottom 50 percentile in steals, bottom 50 percentile in rebounding rate, that's, you know, clearly not good, or not where you need it to be. 35th percentile in assist percentage. He just doesn't do enough. And when he was averaging 24 points per game, as he did the year before, then there was value in him in fantasy, because getting that guy who could score that many points, that's valuable. But he dropped 6 points per game this season. He attempted 3.5 shots per game fewer. A 6 percentage point usage rate drop for Wiggins as well. And if you're scoring 17.7 points instead of 23.6 points, then your fantasy usefulness disappears. And if everything remains intact with this Timberwolves team as he moves into the first year of a max extension, which is going to be ugly, because he's paid $25 million next season, I don't know if he's even a guy that's a draftable player at this point. And yeah, maybe I'd take him with the last pick and hope that we get that 12 percentage point jump back in the free throws. But in terms of him ever being able to increase his rebounding, assists, steals, blocks, or become a good three-point shooter on volume, I don't think that's ever going to happen. It's been 4 years now for Wigo. We've seen the same pattern every single year. Bad rebounding, bad assists, no steals, limited defense, not good three-point shooting, and none of that's changing. So after 4 years, I'm ready to say this is sort of who he is in that realm. He's still not that old. We're still talking about a guy who's just turned 23. But that's 4 NBA years of a shit ton of minutes and no real awareness to change what needs to be done or put in that extra effort. Or maybe he's just incapable of doing those things. And that's probably the scarier part, is that he just isn't able to do the things that we hope. He actually had a negative VORP on this team, a negative box score plus minus. These are all really bad signs that he was, you know, as you're not able to produce positive numbers. A win shares of well below league average, 0.034 is that's per 48 minutes, is not a good number for Wigo, and obviously some real struggles for him and some real questions that have to be asked from him as we move forward. Nemanja Bjelica, really strong performance from him when Butler went out specifically. Averaged 21 minutes per game this season. 7 points, a 3, 4 rebounds, 1.3 assists, 0.8 steals, 46, 80, and 42% over the course of the year. But as I mentioned earlier, he is a restricted free agent. So, you know, how much is he going to be offered as a 30-year-old? Will he be back on this team? We saw him get really limited as the playoffs went along. And in three of the last five games of that series, he played under 6 minutes, including 3 minutes in the last game of the year, the closeout game for the Rockets, which is disappointing to me. Now, in his 21 starts that he made for Butler, of course, he played 34 minutes because Thibodeau has no ability to adjust to anything or be flexible. 11.7 rebounds and 2 assists, over a steal per game average as well. Didn't shoot the ball as well as a starter as what he did as a reserve, but still 42% from three. He's a really strong rate for Bielitz, and he was able to put up some pretty strong numbers and become a useful enough fantasy player in that time. Is he a starter in the league? Probably not. And was that little stretch anomalous to the rest of his career? Yes. So I don't really see that, oh, he's going to be moved to another team and he's going to be freed and we're going to see all these big numbers. I don't really subscribe to that theory necessarily. He averaged 12-7 per 36 this season with 1.4 steals. Nothing overly exciting there with him despite the extra minutes and opportunity that he did get this year. Another team doesn't necessarily solve that problem for Bielitsa, but we saw flashes, which were impressive, and that's always a good thing to see, those positive flashes. Provided some okay defense at moments as well, which is something that he had been criticized for in the past, but was able to be okay in that realm. But overall, I think upside-wise, he is fairly limited. Let's talk Tyus Jones, a guy who I am pretty interested in as a player. I think he has not been used very well in Minnesota, only 18 minutes per game this season, and was supplanted by Derrick Rose in the playoffs at the end of the year. 5 points, 1.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.2 steals. He really is a fiend for steals. That is a fantastic steal rate that he had, 2.3 per 36, along with almost 6 assists per 36. Not a high usage guy, not a high scoring guy, 12% usage over the course of the season, but did it efficiently on 57% true shooting and hit 34% of his threes and was really, really strong from the free throw line. But plus minus on off of 6, which is really strong for Tyus as well. Decent enough advanced numbers, win shares and box score plus minus and all that sort of stuff. But he's not going to be given an opportunity to start in Minnesota. There's a real chance he enters the season as the third string point guard behind Derrick Rose again, which is just nonsense. But that's the possibility. And I think he fits fairly well in the starting unit for this team. Just because, with Butler, with Wiggins, with Towns, he knows, I'm not here to take the shots. I'm here to facilitate the shots. And I'm here to be the bloke who busts my ass on defense and forces those turnovers and becomes a useful contributor in that sense. He started 11 games this year and averaged 9.5 points with 5 assists and averaged almost 3 steals per game, 32 steals across his 11 starts, which is obviously really, really impactful and was a plus 18.4 plus minus during that time as a starter. I think he can be a starter on the right team, a guy that knocks down threes, plays defense, distributes the ball. That could really work even on this team, but it's just not going to happen with Big Thomas Thibodeau in charge because he has a love affair with people that he had, former coach. Now, if Tibbs was to be fired here and hired at another team, he'd probably go out and acquire Tyus Jones because he'd coached him previously. That's the sort of nonsense bullshit that goes on with this bloke. But Jones is a guy who does have top 150 upside because of the steal numbers. Play him 30 minutes a night. You got 2.1 steals per game probably happening there already. Combine that with 6 assists, maybe 1.7 threes. That's enough to be a standard league player. But will he get that role? Probably not. Could be a trade candidate as well, and I'd like to see him play on a different team just to see if he is able to translate those numbers. Now, Jamal Crawford is 38 years of age, 80 games, 21 minutes, 10 points, 1.3 triples, 2.3 assists, inefficient as always, just not a good NBA player at all anymore, not a good fantasy player, and finished outside the top 250 this season. Could be back on another team, could be back on this team. Regardless, you're not going to be caring about Jamal Crawford for standard leagues. He can be a 3-point streaming option, but that's probably about it for Crawford at this point in his career. He does have considerable defensive limitations. A box score, defensive box score plus minus of -4 tells you pretty much all you need to know. Gorgui Dieng, not a great year for Gorgui. 28 years of age, 79 games, 17 minutes per game in that time. 6 points, 4.5 rebounds, 0.6 steals, half a block, 48, 78, and 31% from three. He was the starter before Taj Gibson arrived. I thought that they would continue to start him. That didn't happen. I thought they'd split minutes. That didn't happen. Jeng just barely played. It was just, again, the nonsense of Thibodeau playing starters. All right, starters, you all play 35 minutes. Backups, you just stand around there and tickle your own balls while you wait. Like, that's pretty much the coaching method that Tom Thibodeau had. Now, it wasn't, though, as though Gorgie was fantastic. He was a minus 13, but a lot of these on-off numbers, especially for the bench guys, I put very little faith in it, because it was basically starters, you play every minute together. Bench guys, you come in and play with other shit kickers, and we're not going to rotate, we're not going to change things, we're not going to mix it up, and it's just not going to help there. So it's hard to get a full judge of how those on-off and plus-minus numbers works for those bench guys. Some of his advanced numbers were still pretty good, Gorgie, and above-average win shares. A 0.5 VORP, which isn't too bad, a negative 0.4 box score plus minus, a PER of 15, true shooting of 54, some okay numbers, but it's not like he's really young. He's still signed for a few more years, and that could be a real, it's already looking like an ugly contract, 3 more years guaranteed there for him at about $40-odd million. So that is it is a bit of a concern, but as long as Taj Gibson's around, Jeng is going to be pushed into this limited role, and unless someone gets injured, he's not going to be a fantasy relevant player. He's a guy that can be a top 50 guy because of the steal rate. We've seen these sort of performances. In fact, before this year, his last three fantasy seasons had been 53rd, 60th, and 60th. Because high efficiency from the field, high efficiency from the line, strong rebounding, over a steal, over a block. And that's a formula for getting good fantasy rankings and being a useful player. This year, not much change in terms of his per 36 numbers. In fact, his scoring per 36 went up. His rebounds went up. His steal numbers remained the same, and his block numbers were just marginally less, and his efficiency dipped. And again, I put some of that on confidence and, you know, unhappiness at the current role. So it is someone to watch, but with Thibodeau in charge, it's hard to get overly excited about my man Gorgie Jeng. Let's talk Derek Rose, who was shit in Cleveland, was traded to Utah and immediately cut, and then ended up in Minnesota. Played 9 games, had a PER of 11, a box score plus minus of negative 8.1, which, as you are aware, that is not very good at all. But if I give the same issues for Jeng in terms of bench minutes and how that all works, it is hard to be 100% critical of Rose. And I will be positive here. He scored well in the playoffs. In the games against the Rockets, 16, 9, 17, 17, and 12. Played a lot more minutes than I thought he would. Hit 5 threes in the last 3 games of that series. Didn't distribute the ball, but scored and did it well. I don't necessarily think that that means he's back, but I 100% think that Tom Thibodeau thinks that that means he's back, and he will sign him to next year. For next year, and he will play him 25 minutes per game, and that won't make him a fantasy relevant player, because he just has not been a good fantasy guy. And even in these games, he scored well. He doesn't get steals. He doesn't get assists. He hits threes at a limited rate. He's not a strong rebounder. In those last 3 games, he had 6 rebounds in one game, and in the other 2 games, he had 0 rebounds. So we're talking about really empty looking lines a lot of the time for Rose. He doesn't get to the line really anymore at all, and let's say he's a shit bloke. And I'm not here to support shit blokes at all. But he did put up some decent performances in the playoffs. I just don't get sucked in. And one, do not believe the nonsense that goes on in certain corners of Twitter that says that he should be starting over bloody, over Jeff Teague. That is ludicrous. The Derek Rose fans on Twitter, that is a serious mental illness. And I don't know what to say about it. It is nonsense. The other guys on this team, we just didn't see him. Marcus Georges Hunt was in the rotation for a little bit, and by in the rotation, I mean he'd play every game and play 2 minutes. So not enough to see there, although I like his ability to be a solid defender. Justin Patton, their first round draft choice, who they swindled the Bulls out of to actually get that pick. It was a bad pick at the time, and then played him 3 minutes for the season. 1 game, 3 minutes, and now has a foot problem again. So we don't know, but he's just not going to see the court at all. I don't know what the hell to make of him. Aaron Brooks, Cole Aldrich, Anthony Brown, just nothing. And no matter who gets signed to this team, they're just not going to play off the bench, because that is, of course, the Tom Thibodeau tried and true tested method of being a coach that pisses everybody off and eventually wears your welcome out. And that will happen in the next two seasons. He will be gone from Minnesota. I feel very confident about saying that. Don't want anyone to lose their job. But when you're as stubborn as what Thibodeau is, maybe you should take some responsibility for that sort of thing happening. Guys, follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball and subscribe to this podcast and leave a 5-star rating and review Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and of course on YouTube, and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at LockedOnNBAnet and LockedOnSports.com. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jamal Crawford.